Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, folks. You're very welcome back to Celtic Fanzine TV and podcasts on audio on the Celtic Soul podcast across your favourite platforms. And please, if you're watching in for the first time, please hit that subscribe button, follow, and the alarm button. And if you want to leave a comment, you're more than welcome. Well, today I'm joined on the Grand Old History podcast by a man who knows a little about Celtic. Some would say a lot about Celtic. Celtic historian and author of, I think, about 40 books, but David might fill us in. And I'm sure he's working on another project as well. David Potter, you're very welcome back to the, I suppose, the Celtic Soul podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
How have you been?
I've been very well, thank you. It's been a good Christmas and New Year. As I say, I've missed the football a little bit, but that again, kind of, there's not much you can do about that. And I've always been able to savour and look back on that League Cup final, which I've watched every single recording there's ever been on my YouTube, and it's every time I see these two goals, they get better. And funny, right? Both goals, when you look at them, you think, here, they're both offside. But it's when you play them back, you realise it's not offside. And we did actually have a good linesman on that particular day. But certainly, for both goals, you could make a case when you look at it, you know, the first time, here, that's offside. But it's not. There was two wonderful goals and a very good day for Celtic on the 19th of December.
And wonderful, two wonderful goals, wonderful passes for them as well, wonderful balls in, and at a time, yes, when we were just slumped into our seats, David. What an equaliser, oh, yes, within a minute.
Yes, indeed. I thought that was the end when Hibs scored, because, you know, often the first goal in the cup final is the vital one. You know, but we fought back immediately. And although with a wee bit of luck towards the end, you know, Hibs at least twice could have scored. I think we were the better team throughout. And we just knew how to win the game, which is the main thing. You know, you knew how there was game management skills there and were in evidence, which haven't always been in evidence in the past. But it was a good day. And well done, Celtic.
And some of our younger listeners will be wondering, what's the problem? We always win the League Cup, but it wasn't always that way, David, because you've wrote extensively on the League Cup, and it was a tournament, I suppose, or a competition before Brendan Rodgers arrived. That wasn't our best hunting ground.
Yes, I think we're slowly catching up, though. I mean, we've now won the League Cup 20 times, as distinct from Rangers 27. So the gap used to be huge. It's now still rather too large for what I would like, but we're slowly catching up. And apart from that year last year when St Johnstone won it, we've now won it since 2016. Oh, it's been our exclusive property since 2016. So it's been good for us of late, and I hope that continues. It's a lovely cup, that one, with the three handles. I love that. Looking at that Scottish League Cup, it's a beautiful cup, especially when, of course, it's draped with green and white ribbons.
Yeah, I love how simple you put things, Dave, and the simplicity you bring to the game, especially in the modern game when there's just so much going on. But we're in the middle of the transfer madness, and it got worse as the month goes on. But you spoke there about the goal scorer. What a summer signing he was, Kyogo. You know, we didn't know much about the manager. We didn't know much about the player, and we had an American journalist on who writes about the J League and is based in Tokyo. Dan, the man from Japan, Dan Horowitz, and he's going to be joining us this week as well for a chat. But he told us how good Ange was, what we could expect, what type of football he was going to play. There would be bumps. And he also told us about Kyogo and what type of player he was. And I'm looking forward to getting talking to him again about the three new recruits because, you know, I don't think there's anyone too disappointed with the new manager or the new striker.
Not at the moment, no. I think things have gone really very well. I think Kyogo has got something, and he's obviously very happy to be at Celtic Park, and he's adapted very well to Scotland, which can't be the easiest of countries to adapt to when you've lived in Japan all your life. As for the three guys who are now with us as well, obviously you don't know. I mean, I hear very well of them. Your journalist friend and others have told me how good they are. So we'll look forward to seeing them. But you can't really make any judgment until you actually see them on the park wearing the green and white stripes.
Yeah, and there'll be a bit of pressure on them as well coming in because, you know, most people will be expecting them to be every bit as good as Kyogo. And maybe they are, maybe they're not. But, like, we can't afford any more slip-ups now. Because
I was just going to make that point.
Oh, very few.
Andrew, we've no leeway at all, really, because we're 6 points behind. Now, if, for example, we were to lose to Hibs tomorrow night and Rangers were to beat Aberdeen on, I think it's Tuesday night they play, that would be 9 points. And that would begin to look as if we couldn't do it. As it is, we're only six. We certainly can do it because we've got to play Rangers three times. Apparently, there's some doubt about the game on the 2nd of February now because of international commitments for some of our players. But I hope it goes ahead that day. I really think this is a good time to be playing Rangers, and we've got to attack them fairly soon and fairly quickly, I think, to get back into the league race.
Yeah, 100%. And as I said, we brought in the three Japanese players. We've often brought in a young lad from Sligo who is highly touted, very, very good player, Johnny Kenny, and not John Joe Kenny, as many people were worried about. But he's coming in as well, and we'll hopefully we'll have someone on from a Sligo fan on as well during the week to give us the lowdown on him because we're hearing lots about him. We've seen him. And he kind of was under the radar in the League of Ireland as a youth player until he got his chance during COVID and went into the Sligo team as a schoolboy. Since then, he's finished his exams. He scored 11 goals in 33 appearances, and some of them were off the bench and some were coming on. So minute-wise, his record is very good. The word here is that he'll go straight into the B team. He won't be going out alone because of his age. He's 18. And he'll be... There's high hopes that he may make the bench by the end of the season, and there's high hopes as well that because of what Andrew's been saying recently about bringing players up from the B team to train with the first team, that he will get some time with the first team because Andrew told me recently at a press conference that he wants the players to come up to train with them so that when they are called up, like at the end of last season when he needed the players to fill the bench, that they come up, they know what to expect, they know the high intensity that the first team is playing. And I think now he has Tommy McIntyre tuned into his wavelength, and Tommy is trying to play that style as well. So all bounds well for the future.
Well, it does. I think one of the problems is going to be the sheer amount of players that we have. And the fact that we can only play 11 at a time, well, I mean, obviously with a few subs as well. And I think it's a test of character, particularly some of our Japanese recruits, whether they can bide their time, because they can't really expect to be straight into the team, all three of them, for example, tomorrow night. Will not be playing, will not be starting tomorrow night. I think something wrong if that were to happen. So they have to bide their time and learn. It's a learning experience about what Celtic's all about. You know, even sitting on the bench or sitting in the stand and watching the game, you really have to do that, I think, sometimes, just to learn what Celtic is all about and what it means to supporters. So it's a test of character, I think, for some of the new guys.
Yeah, Dave, and I suppose transfer windows, they get us all excited. Now, the January transfer window was never as exciting as the summer one, because sometimes it does panic at the end of it. Like a John Joe Kenny, you're bringing in players to fill the gap that, you know, at the start of January they certainly went in your plans. But Ange has done his business very early. He said a couple of weeks ago at a press conference that he was looking at players in Japan, Australia, and we now know that with McGree he was looking at some of the. We've also been linked to players in Iran. Now, nothing has come of that, but he did say in that press conference that he was looking towards Iran as well. So there may be a little bit of truth. And then during that press conference, he said, I've said enough now. I don't want anyone else looking at these players. But he certainly brings a wider scope into the players that we normally bring in.
Yes, I think that's the case. And I think you must welcome the growing internationalism of Celtic, because Celtic is very much an international side. I remember getting a wee bit of a shock once 20 years ago when I went to Parkhead and I saw somebody with a Swedish flag, obviously in honour of Henrik Larsson. And it struck me as a bit odd because the Swedish flag, it's not green and so on, you know, and it's odd. But Celtic is a very much an international commodity and really has to stay that way. And so you welcome the growing internationalism of it all, although it does mean that for supporters like you and me who are not experts on Japanese or Australian or Iranian football or Iraqi football, it would be you have to take a lot on spec, as it were, a lot on trust until you actually see them playing for Scotland, playing in Scotland. And of course, playing in Scotland with all its funny pitches and strange referees and funny interpretations of rules sometimes is a novel experience. It's quite a difficult experience for quite a lot of people, and a lot of people just frankly don't cope with it very well. I mean, for example, I think that Mr. Duffy, who is now back with Brighton, I mean, I don't think he ever coped with Scotland all that well, which is a shame because those friends of mine who supported Brighton said he was good and continue to say he's good.
Yeah, and it didn't work out for Shane, but he's come back, and fair play to him. He's got himself, he's in the Irish team, he's playing well for Ireland in Stephen Kenny's new setup and the style of play he's playing. And he's, you know, he wasn't in Brighton's plans, and he gets himself back into the team, and he does well. So, fair play to him. That's one transfer that didn't work. Now, also in transfer windows, we lose players. And in recent years, we've probably lost our best players, especially ones with a good sell-on value. And I'll pick two out. One, we always knew was going to leave because he used to stroll through games. And he's now probably the best central defender in the world. And that's big Virgil van Dijk. And we have to tip our cap to Neil Lennon and the scouts at that time who brought Virgil in. And then I believe Ronnie Delia told him when he was going to Southampton for, I think it was 12 million, that if he held on at Celtic, he could bypass Southampton and he would get a move to the big clubs. But I suppose the money turned his head and an agent was probably thinking sell-on fees and his cut. So He didn't take Ronnie's advice and he left, and he's proved that he's a world-class player, as I said, one of the best in the world, if not the best. And then I suppose the one that shocked a lot of people was when we lost one of our own, but you know, Kieran Tierney left the club. It divided the fans. He went to a big club in Arsenal, and probably for life-changing money. And he probably, you know, at a young age, the club probably looked as well, because Kieran had his injuries, and they probably thought, this is a great deal. But he's proved now that he's, you know, a potential future Arsenal captain. And you wrote at the time, I remember, about when he left, about him leaving. But you remember so many, David, players who have left when, I suppose, money wasn't as big in down south, and, you know, Scottish teams were competing in Europe on a regular basis, like their English counterparts. And I'm going to kind of go back to a couple, because you wrote a great article, and during the week we put two feeders out on that. One was Kane Dalglish, the other was Chan Nicholas. But if I think back to that article, David, you also wrote about Paddy Querent, who left a team who won the Urban Cup, and then the following year won the Urban Cup. So, you know, how lucky was Paddy? And then we also have, going further back, I think you wrote about Jimmy Delaney as well. So can you just, you know, tell the listeners and the viewers a little about those players in history that moved on and the effect they had on the club?
To take them in order, as it were, I mean, Jimmy Delaney, he went in 1946, and I think he was probably quite right to realise that Celtic would go no place in the 1940s. He probably actually felt that he was at the end of his career as well in 1946. I mean, he'd won a cup medal for Celtic in 1937. And then, lo and behold, he goes on to win a cup medal for Manchester United, an English cup medal for Manchester United in 1948. And then in 1954, he wins an Irish cup medal for Derry City. And the following, the 2 years after that, he lost in, I don't know what it's called, the League of Ireland Cup, the Era Cup, whatever League, it's called.
The FAI Cup.
FAI Cup, that's right. And he was playing for Cork and he lost that one. He would have had four. As it was, he has three medals, and that is unique in world football, particularly when he won these three medals in three different decades. And there was a big world war in the middle of that. I mean, that is really a remarkable achievement for this man called Jimmy Delaney. But Jimmy Delaney was always Celtic through and through. He was enticed to Manchester United through, I think, Matt Busby, and a feeling that he had gone as far as he could go with Celtic. And he felt that, you know, Celtic weren't going any place in the 1940s. And of course, in that case, he turned out to be correct. But, of course, his grandson is John Kennedy, who's our assistant manager, as you know. But Jimmy Delaney was a great player, and nobody really resented the fact that he'd moved on from Celtic at that point in the way that they did probably resent the fact that Dalglish went and Nicholas went. I think the Dalglish transfer, I wouldn't necessarily criticise Kenny Dalglish himself for what he did. I mean, he's got a duty to play for the best team and so on. But you really have to criticise the Celtic management and the Celtic board of directors at that time, because it was only 10 years after Celtic had won the European Cup, and it sent out the signal, I think, to the world that Celtic were no longer interested in emulating that feat if they were prepared to sell on their best player. But by some distance, their best player in the 70s. And that one caused an awful lot of distress. And of course, it did, in the long term, well, a year later, it did precipitate the resignation of Jock Stein. Whether there was more behind that transfer or not, Glasgow seethed with rumours, as it always does, but nothing substantial's come out about that. But it really was a bad, bad time to be a Celtic supporter, 1977 to 1978, not because they'd lost Dalglish necessarily, but because they didn't use the money immediately to replace him. They bought some really awful players with the money, old players, the ones that just weren't up to anything, with maybe one exception, Tom McAdam, who had had a good few seasons for Celtic. But that was really a very, very sad time, I always felt, for Celtic in 1977 to 1978. We slowly recovered. And then, of course, the problem in the early 80s was that we allowed ourselves to be over-dependent on Charlie Nicholas. Charlie Nicholas was a great player. He was even favourably compared with Patsy Gallagher by my father. And that, frankly, is saying something, because my father thought that, you know, Pelle and Garrincha and Stanley Matthews were nothing like as good as Patsy Gallagher. But my father did say that he thought Charlie Nicholas had something in him that was like Patsy Gallagher. And we allowed ourselves to become over-dependent, I fear, on Charlie Nicholas. And in 1983, when Charlie Nicholas didn't play in a Scottish Cup semi-final against Aberdeen, for reasons that you're maybe not meant to say, but everybody knows, and involves something to do with police cells. But Charlie Nicholas didn't play that day, and we lost to Aberdeen 1-0 in the semi-final of 1983. And then, of course, he was transferred to Arsenal in 1983, where he never really replicated or reproduced the form that he had shown for Celtic. I mean, I saw Nicholas quite a lot in 1980. I think he was injured in 1981 to 1982, if I remember rightly. But in 1980 to 1981, he had an absolutely superb season. It was his first season, and he was absolutely superb. A great player was Charlie Nicholas, but he only really did it for Celtic in his first spell. He never really did it with Arsenal. He never did it with Aberdeen. And he certainly didn't do it with Celtic in his second spell in the early 90s. And Charlie Nicholas, I'm afraid, causes me a lot of distress on looking back. And I think that's a distress that's shared by quite a few Celtic supporters.
And then the final one that you wrote about that time, because I know it was a hero of yours back in the 60s, and that was Paddy Crerand.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Paddy Crerand, that was a very difficult one to take. Again, one sees why Pat Crerand left. Again, he was probably seduced, as it were, by Mark Busby, who, of course, was a brilliant manager and, of course, a great Celtic supporter, and very much always remained to his death a Celtic sympathiser, did Mark Busby. And I see why Pat Crerand felt that he had to leave the, frankly, rather corrupt regime that was going around Celtic in 1963 under the tyranny of Bob Kelly, who nobody could doubt that Bob Kelly was very much in charge of Celtic, and he loved Celtic and so on. But his judgment, particularly on football matters, was open to a lot of question. And of course, he tended to throw his weight about in a way that a chairman should not interfere too much with the players. And I could see how Pat Crerand would fall out with that. And of course, it all came to a head on New Year's Day 1963, when Celtic lost 4-0 to Rangers at Ibrox, and apparently, again, this is Glasgow gossip that everybody knows about, there was a major falling out between Pat Crerand and Sean Fallon at half-time in the dressing room that day. And of course, Crerand never played again for Celtic. It was 6 weeks later before he was actually transferred, but he was dropped for the trip to Aberdeen 2 or 3 days later after New Year, and then the bad weather came down, because 1963 was a very frosty winter indeed, and the football was off for weeks. And in the middle of February, Crerand departed to Manchester United. And of course, if Celtic were in a bad state before he left, they were in the worst state afterwards. And I do remember the 1963 Scottish Cup final replay, the night of the walkout, the famous walkout, and it was coming down the stairs. I think we'd still be a quarter an hour to go, but we'd had enough. And I remember the man in tears at the bottom of the stairs saying, Pat Crerand, I hope you're proud of yourself. And there were a few bad words incorporated in that as well, I may say, which I'm not going to repeat. But it showed just how much the Celtic supporters felt betrayed by Pat Crerand. Although a few years later, you could realise why he decided to go. And the fact is that if Jock Steen had been manager of Celtic, Pat Crerand would have still stayed. There's no doubt about that.
And who came in to replace Pat? Did they bring someone in to replace Pat?
Not really, no. No, they played, if I remember rightly, they played John McNamee. John McNamee, however you pronounce his name, man who went on to play for Hibs and Newcastle United. They played him as a sort of double centre-half, or even as a kind of an old-fashioned right-half alongside McNeil, and that was not a success. The Celtic team of 1963 was absolutely dreadful. It was only a few years later, again when Jock Steen arrived, that they realised they had a world-class right half at Celtic Park. Anyway, but nobody at the time noticed that. And of course, that was Bobby Murdoch. Bobby Murdoch, who was a good enough inside right, but not great. He was moved back by Jock to right half, and the world just changed almost immediately, because Murdoch was one of these players. He needed really to have the ball at his feet, and he needed to be facing forward. He wasn't very good at waiting for a ball coming through to him, you know, looking behind to see if a ball was coming through. But he was great. I mean, he just took charge of midfield. And of course, the Lisbon triumph was based on Murdoch at one part of the midfield and Bertie Auld in the other. And that was just, frankly, unbeatable, as we proved.
And then, Charlie Nick, who did they bring in when Charlie went to London?
They brought a guy called Jim Melrose from, I think, Partick Thistle, who was, you know, not a bad player for Partick Thistle, but he, frankly, was just not Celtic class, and he couldn't possibly replace Nicholas. And yet it was so annoying as well, because round about that time we had so many other good players as well. I mean, with people like Tommy Burns, Paul McStay was fast developing, with Murdo McLeod, these were all great players, but somehow or another it just didn't click. Davy Hay, of course, he was appointed manager in 1983 after McNeil left. Now, I am told by those who know about such things that there was no connection between the departure of Nicholas and the departure of McNeil. I suspect they may have been there, but anyway, the pair of them were away in 1983. Davy Hay came in, and Davy Hay, again, not a bad manager at all, and a very much a great Celtic player and a great Celt, but he just couldn't cope with that situation in 1983 to 1984, where the problem was not so much Rangers. Celtic were certainly better than Rangers in 1984, but the problem was Alec Ferguson's Aberdeen. It was just sheer hard luck that at that same time, Aberdeen, and to a lesser extent Dundee United, but mainly Aberdeen, had risen. And of course, Aberdeen won the Scottish League and Cup in 1984. And again, that was a very, very distressing time to be a Celtic supporter indeed. And so much of it is caused by the selling on of a player and not replacing him. Now, that has been less of a problem with the selling of Kieran Tierney, because I would not at the moment identify fullback as a major problem for Celtic. I think we have several very good fullbacks, in fact, maybe more than we need. And I wouldn't identify at the moment the fullback is a problem for Celtic. But the thing is, if you are going to sell on a class player, you must use your money to replace him, either by buying somebody who is just as good, or several who are maybe not individually as good as the guy you've lost, but collectively can make an awful difference.
Yeah, and it's interesting now, Dave, how successful all the players. Well, Kieran Tierney is still in a developing team, I suppose. He hasn't won anything, but he has time, and he's probably time, if reports are correct. Arsenal may not be his final port of call, because he's really he's really making a name for himself down there. Virgil van Dijk is going to, sorry, David. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say that I'm not sure that Arsenal are the best team for Tierney at the moment. I noticed, for example, they managed to get their game against Tottenham Hotspur called off today. And that actually sends out the wrong signals to Gunner supporters, I think. You know, they're not wanting to play Tottenham Hotspur. That was not a good move from Arsenal. And they were absolutely awful in the English Cup last week. And Kieran Tierney, late in the game, I don't know if you remember that, but he gave away a foul throw. Now, you frankly shouldn't do that when your team's pressing for an equaliser and he conceded a foul throw, so the free kick went the other way. And I just wonder whether it's a success, Tierney at Arsenal. And I think you're probably right. I think he may move on someplace else. But he certainly, Tierney, I must give him a lot of credit for, he has played very well for Scotland in the times that I've seen him playing for Scotland. So I give him a lot of credit for that. And he is indeed a great player. And of course, it is my earnest desire that sooner or later he comes back to Celtic Park.
Yeah, it'd be nice for him to come back.
It would.
Big Virgil, I don't think he'll be coming back anytime soon. He has, you know, been the last, I suppose, cog in the Liverpool team. You know, league winners, but he has been out with injury, but he's gone on to success.
Yes.
Jimmy Delaney, you know, three titles in three different leagues, and I think it's three different decades even, David, if I remember.
Yeah, it was the Cups rather than the...
Sorry, the Cups. Yeah. I think was the 40s. No, maybe it was two decades.
No, it's three decades.
Is it, yeah? So the 40s, 50s and 60s.
30s, 40s, 50s.
30s, 40s and 50s.
Jimmy Delaney, yeah. Jimmy Delaney, Celtic versus Aberdeen, 1937. Manchester United versus, I think, Blackpool, 1948. And Derry City versus, and somebody told me who it was, but anyway, 1954. So it was,
The memory man, unbelievable, David. And it was the Cups, I said leagues, long before my time. And then Paddy Craren goes off, you know, has success, wins the European Cup. Kane Dalglish has, you know, probably the most success. He goes off and he wins everything that can be won in football. What a player he turned out for Liverpool. And I remember him at Liverpool. I was too young to remember him at Celtic. And then you have, as you say, Charlie Nicholas, who promised everything and delivered nothing.
Yes, indeed.
Which is kind of like he's the one that sticks out of all the players we spoke about who left the club.
Yeah.
Who had the potential, I suppose, to go all the way.
He's the one that only really played well for Celtic in his first spell. At the moment, he seems to go out of his way to annoy Celtic and Celtic fans. The things he says, he seems to be, you know, it's almost his stock in trade. Let's annoy more Celtic fans today. And he's still not very popular among the Celtic community in Glasgow, I'm afraid.
Yeah, there's a lot
of respect for you, Sonny.
It happens with ex-players who work in the media. Some of them, and I won't mention them, but some of them get a lot of stick, but some of them are given their opinion. And, you know, recently one player has been given his opinion on a few players, and I don't think it's much different than the majority of the fans. You know, and certainly on one player, and I think he's right to say that for this player to, you know, for his career to progress, he needs to move on because he's not going to be part of a regular starter for Ange. And I won't mention the player that said it, but I mentioned the player, and that's Mikey Johnson. And Mikey is on the fringes. And I think with each transfer window that passes, he will knock down the pecking order, and he has plenty of talent.
I actually think that Mikey Johnson, I have actually a high opinion of Mikey Johnson. I've seen him having some great games, but I have to say that this season he's been particularly disappointing with his tendency to run at a defence and lose the ball when he could pass. That's the one thing I would say that I've seen him doing quite a lot this season. But the talent is certainly there. There's no doubt about that. And I tend to think that for Mikey, if he were to move to someone like, who we say, someone, you know, a good English championship team, You know, someone like, shall we say, Nottingham Forest or Middlesbrough or somebody like that, I think that might be a good move for Mikey. You know, and but he's, it's a shame because he certainly does have something, but he just hasn't been doing it this past year.
Yeah, and everyone always wants players that come up through the ranks to break in and to do well. There's something special about a player coming through the ranks. Look at Kieran Terry, and now we have Anthony Ralston, who has, you know, he waited a long time for his chance, but he grabbed it and he's done brilliant in the first 6 months. Now,
I have a great opinion of Anthony Ralston because I remember when he started playing this season, his first few games this season, he received a tremendous amount of stick on the Celtic media for just not being Celtic class, no good enough, and so on. And he's proved them all wrong.
Yes.
He's proved them all wrong. He's outstanding.
He certainly has. And it's funny, he's in, you know, Juranovic is a quality player as well. Probably our best, you know, probably the best player we have at set pieces at the moment. All we need all we need now is someone just to meet them corners. Hopefully someone will, because it's alarming how little we score from set pieces.
Yeah. Well, as somebody said to me, and he's right, he said that there's no such a thing as a good corner kick or a good free kick or even a good cross unless there's somebody underneath it to finish it off. I mean, you can always say any corner kick's a good one, but there's nobody there. I mean, you have to have someone, as you say, you're right, you know, we need somebody to finish things off. And there is a dearth of scoring goals from corner kicks and free kicks, you're right, as well. I miss Bill McNeil.
Oh, well, you know, you're going back a while down now. David, it's always a pleasure to have you in for a chat. Your knowledge is amazing. Just any new projects? Are you working on anything new?
Yes. I'm just finishing a book on Willie Fernie at the moment, which I don't know whether your viewers knew about this, but Willie Fernie, it's called Piling on the Agony. It's on the song of the, based on the song of the 7-1 game, you know, Failing on the agony, putting on the style. That's what Glasgow Celtic have been doing all this while. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ways to make you smile. Watching Willie Fernie, putting on the style. It refers to the 7-1 League Cup final of October the 19th, 1957, in which Fernie was absolutely outstanding. But he was an example, incidentally, of a man who went to England and came back. Because he played a couple of years in Middlesbrough, along with Brian Clough and a few others. He's still adored down in Middlesbrough. But then he came back and played well for Celtic and took us to the Scottish Cup final of 1961, which we didn't win. But he was a great player, was Willie Fernie. So I've quite enjoyed doing that book, and it should be out in a few months' time. I'm just finishing off the photographs.
So that's the holiday reading sorted.
Well, I hope so, yes, I hope so. And then after that, I'm thinking of doing something about 1965, which I'm going to call Celtic's Year of Revolution. It was the year in which Jock Steen arrived at the end of January, and I'm comparing with where we were at the beginning of January 1965, New Year's Day 1965, compared with what we were like a year later when Jock Steen was there. And 1965 is a fascinating year. But that's what I'm working on at the moment.
Plenty to keep you busy.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Dave, it's been a pleasure, folks. If you like what you see and what you hear, please hit the subscribe or follow button on your preferred platform if you prefer to listen to an audio. And if you're watching on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button, send us a comment and hit the alarm and whatever else you do on YouTube. And thanks to Paddy Goodwin, Solicitors and Drawler, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. And if you would like to support us, you can do so by buying the latest issue of the fanzine. You can subscribe to the fanzine. All the details are on celticfanzine.com. And you can also donate for the price of a pint. So, folks, thanks for watching. Thanks to David. And let's hope we close that gap in Rangers and we're all on the Ange train. Once again,
I think the important thing is just take it one game at a time. Hibs, Monday night, And maybe by the time you watch this, it'll be over. But that's what we're concentrating on, one game at a time. And do not underestimate Alloa Athletic in the Scottish Cup. Do not underestimate them. Don't underestimate anyone. One game at a time.
Yes, you're correct. We all have nightmares about Clyde.
David, indeed.
As I said, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.